Hello, hello. This is Kathavani. Welcome back to this episode of Ramayana, Ayodhya Khanda, episode 20, Peace and Grief. Thank you for listening. In the last episode, Rama, Sita and Lakshmana parted with Guha and Sumatra on the banks of Ganga. They crossed the river by ferry, traveled by foot, and on the next day arrived at Sage Bharadwaja's ashram at Prayag. The kind sage greeted the travelers warmly and generously offered them a home for the 14 years of exile in his scenic ashram at the confluence of the sacred rivers Ganga and Yamuna. Rama, thoughtful as usual, was mindful of the intrusion on the other dwellers at the ashram. He respectfully asked Rishi Bharadwaja to suggest a place more suitable for Sita's comfort, scenic and secluded. The wise sage suggested Chitrakuta, about 10 kroshas away from his ashram. Krosha is an ancient unit of measuring distance. It literally refers to calling distance, that is, how far away a human voice is heard or carried. It is about 3 kilometers or 1.8 miles. Maharishi Bharadwaja described the magnificence of Chitrakuta to Rama thus: as long as one beholds the peaks of Chitrakuta, one will be inspired to perform good deeds and avoid sinful thoughts. Rama, it looks like Gandhamadana. He explained to Rama how Chitrakuta, since ancient times, had been frequented by saints and ascetics who successfully practiced their austerities, became emaciated, and lived long lives as enlightened beings. Bharadwaja continued, the sacred mountain abounds in fruits and roots and is an ideal place for ascetics. Go there, Rama. Your heart will overflow with joy while you wander the hills with Sita, enjoying rivers, waterfalls, caves and plateaus. Rama, I think you will be pleased living there if you make it home for the duration of your banishment. Monkeys, apes and bears roam freely. You will rejoice seeing the herds of elephants and deers, and it will be a pleasant stay for Sita. You are also indeed welcome to stay here with me in this ashram during your exile. Rama accepted the sage's recommendation and decided to spend some time in Chitrakuta. Since it was already drawing close to sunset, the exhausted travelers decided to break journey in the sage's ashram, spending the evening in the company of the Rishi, who narrated entertaining anecdotes and stories. The next morning, they completed their morning rituals, took leave of Maharishi Bharadwaja. The saint gave them detailed instructions to Chitrakuta, which was about 20 miles away, and blessed them heartily. Rama, Lakshmana and Sita walked along the river Yamuna towards Chitrakuta. Before we part ways with sage Bharadwaja, let's dive briefly into the legendary saint's life story. Sage Bharadwaja is one of the seven ancient Saptarishis. Similar to other Saptarishis, Bharadwaja's lineage of disciples and descendants, his followers, belong to the Bharadwaja Gotra or clan. Sage Bharadwaja is believed to have been the birth son of the ancient sage Brahaspati, who himself was son of Saptarishi Angirasa. Sage Angirasa was the Manasputra son of Lord Brahma, the creator god. Baby Bharadwaja was adopted by the Marudaganas, who were devas or gods, sons of Kashyapa and Diti. Around the same time, King Bharata, son of Dushyanta and Shakuntala, was without heir and performed a sacrifice to please Indra, the leader of the devas. A quick refresher, Shakuntala was the daughter of Maharishi Vishwamitra and Apsara Menaka and grew up in Kanva Maharishi's ashram after her parents left her in the sage's care. She met and married Dushyanta, king of Puru dynasty. King Bharata was their illustrious son, an emperor who ruled Bharatavarsha, the region around the Gangetic Plains. India is still known as Bharat, named after him. The Marudaganas arrived at the sacrificial site of Emperor Bharata's yajna, where the rituals were being performed, and inform the king about the child in their guardianship. King Bharata, along with his illustrious queen, happily adopted this child Bharadwaja as their heir. Bharadwaja grew up as a prince who preferred studying the Vedas to riding horses and chariots or training to be a Kshatriya warrior. In time, the prince Bharadwaja married a Kshatriya prince Sushila as per tradition. King Bharata, the progenitor of the Kuru clan of Mahabharata, was genuinely concerned about his son Bharadwaja's deep spiritual interests and detachment from worldly matters. Bharadwaja spent most of his time studying scriptures and the Vedas. In response to his father's doubts, he confirmed to his father that he had no interest in being king. Instead, he used his knowledge to lead the yajna sacrifice for King Bharata so that he was blessed with a suitable heir. After the sacrificial rituals to please the gods, Bharata's queen soon gave birth to a son who became the heir to the throne. King Bharata died before his heir came of age. It is believed that Bharadwaja hence stayed behind to rule and guide his brother until he was ready to take on the reins of the kingdom. When the time came, Bharadwaja willingly retired to the forest as an ascetic and continued studying the Vedas. He was probably a disciple of Maharishi Valmiki, the author of Ramayana, as well as Saptarishi Gautama, the husband of the beautiful Ahalya, whom we met in an earlier episode. Bharadwaja soon realized that despite his constant efforts with gurus and in solitude, he needed more than a lifetime to study the Vedas and acquire all knowledge. He sat in penance, meditating on Indra, the king of Devas who controlled natural forces. When Indra appeared, pleased by Bharadwaja's intense devotion and concentration, Bharadwaja asked Indra for an extended lifetime to master the three Vedas and all knowledge. Indra asked Bharadwaja to measure out three fistfuls of mud and then explained to him that if the entire knowledge of the Vedas was the earth, Bharadwaja had only acquired three fistfuls worth of knowledge despite his lifelong study. Yet this, Indra said, was more than any other mortal knew. Indra blessed Bharadwaja with a long life but ordered Bharadwaja to start spending his existing knowledge for the welfare of mankind and the world. Maharishi Bharadwaja remained in the vicinity of people on the banks of Ganga, preaching the Vedas, extolling virtues, promoting dharma and good conduct. He advocated for the welfare of the common man, appealing to the kings and other leaders to serve mankind. He questioned social norms and championed actions to keep peace and improve the lives of the common people everywhere. Bharadwaja was renowned for his extended meditations, generosity, and extensive scholarship. His advice and help was sought by kings far and near, as well as saints and regular folk. Another legend is that after a great famine ravaged the Gangetic plains, along with diseases and wars, the people in the region struggled across kingdoms and empires for many years. The sages and saints of the time gathered in the Himalayas to explore the means to lessen the unending suffering of the people and for the establishment of dharma. This ancient conference of saints decided they needed to appease the gods, Indra in particular. Bharadwaja volunteered and led the efforts to perform the sacrificial rituals with the sacred Agni, fire, chanting mantras from the Vedas. When the king of gods, Indra, answered their prayers, Bharadwaja requested that he be blessed with the knowledge of medicine to treat the physical ailments and diseases of people so they could live with less suffering and develop discipline to carry the dharma and to reach higher spiritual awakening. In response to Bharadwaja's appeal, Indra bestowed the knowledge of Ayurveda, the scripture prescription for a long disease-free life. The knowledge of Ayurveda is said to have come from Brahma, the creator god, through Dhanvantari, who emerged during the churning of the ocean carrying Amrita, the nectar of immortal life. Vishnu Purana describes Dhanvantari as the physician of the gods. The twin brothers Ashwin Kumaras also learned this art of healing and living healthily and taught their king Indra. Indra, entreated by sage Bharadwaja now to help improve the conditions of mankind, gladly shared his knowledge with the saint for the benefit of the world. Maharishi Bharadwaja, with this smriti of Ayurveda, spread the knowledge to his peers, sages and seers. Together, they spread this knowledge to their disciples to nourish, promote and maintain good health, as well as treat and cure diseases in the ailing. This knowledge from the ancient times of Bharadwaja has been passed down from guru to disciples, and Ayurveda still plays an important role in the daily diet and treatment of diseases in India and now in other parts of the world. Bharadwaja's ashram in Prayag on the banks of the junction of rivers Ganga and Yamuna is mentioned in ancient literature as dispensing Ayurvedic treatment to ailing patients and nurturing them to good health. Bharadwaja's disciples documented his experiential observations, theories, and treatment methodologies as treatises. Charaka Samhita is one of the foundational and significant textbooks authored collectively from the work and records of this lineage of sage Bharadwaja's disciples. It is believed from accounts from Puranas, including Maharishi Valmiki's Ramayana, that sage Bharadwaja lived around the same time and in the vicinity of sage Valmiki on the banks of Ganga and Yamuna at Prayag. It seems like these seekers and seers moved around the river valleys and plains in northern India to learn from renowned gurus of their times, conduct sacrifices for royal patrons, and to promote social welfare. Maharishi Valmiki, and in his telling sage Bharadwaja, have displayed substantial ability to describe the geography and vegetation of these regions in great detail for directing travelers to their destinations. Rama, Lakshmana, and Sita followed this sage Bharadwaja's detailed directions, walking westward along River Yamuna, also known in those times as River Kalindi. They reached the point where they needed to cross the River Yamuna. Following sage Bharadwaja's instructions, Rama and Lakshmana made a raft after logging wood from nearby trees. They lined the raft with bamboo shoots, and Lakshmana thoughtfully made Sita a comfortable seat with leaves from nearby trees. As they crossed the river on this raft, Sita prayed to the river goddess Yamuna for a safe crossing and Rama's safe return to Ayodhya after a successful exile. On reaching the other bank of Yamuna, they walked the well-trodden, smooth and safe path until they saw the banyan tree mentioned by sage Bharadwaja as a landmark. He'd mentioned it as a sacred site. Sita invoked the spirits under this tree as instructed by the sage, praying for Rama's success and their safe return to Ayodhya after fulfilling the exile terms. She prayed that she would see her mothers-in-law, Queen Kausalya and Queen Sumitra, again after their return to Ayodhya. She went around the tree offering her prayers and seeking blessings. Watching his beloved Sita, who flawlessly adapted to her new surroundings, Rama turned to Lakshmana and said, "Brother, walk ahead with Sita while I bring the weapons and follow. Pick her flowers and fruits or anything else that will please her." Sita walked cheerfully between the two brothers, captivated by the beauty of these woods. Lakshmana brought back to her branches laden with flowers, fruits to taste, and Sita kept up her questions and comments to Rama about everything they passed, birds, animals, trees, and creepers. She was excited to see exotic water birds, swans, and cranes on the river Yamuna and its sandy banks. The day passed by without any discomfort, and they camped for the night a safe distance from the river bank. The next day, they continued their journey towards Chitrakuta right after their morning rituals. As they neared the mountain, they were delighted to see trees and creepers heavy with flowers and edible fruits, game animals, honeycombs, and a variety of birds and animals. Rama was reassured by the pleasant and scenic surroundings, abundance of fruits and roots, flower-laden trees, and Sita's general enjoyment of the scenic surroundings. He looked forward to the prospect of living in Chitrakuta, home to many great sages. He indicated to Lakshmana his preference to make this site in this secluded spot their home. Lakshmana immediately went to work selecting trees, cutting logs, gathering leaves. He constructed the hut's frame with the logs and used mats made of leaves for walls and weaved a thatched roof with the leaves. Rama marveled at his brother's immense skills building a sturdy hut for them. Together, they gathered materials to complete the sacrificial rites with the sacred fire, a homa, to bless their home. Rama set up the sacrificial fire, chanted mantras, and completed the rituals to deities to bless their stay in Chitrakuta in that hut as their home. Rama set up altars in the hut to sanctify their home according to tradition. After completing their rites, they entered their new home joyously. In this sacred and scenic location, they forgot the sorrow of being banished from their beloved families and home in Ayodhya. Meanwhile, Sumatra was heading back to Ayodhya and entered the desolate city. He realized the citizens were still mourning the crushing disappointments of Rama's coronation being stalled and Rama's subsequent exile. As Sumatra drove into the city past the gloomy houses, people ran up to his chariot without passengers to inquire about Rama. Sumatra informed them that he'd last seen them on the banks of Ganga, heading towards Dandakaranya. The people of Ayodhya were concerned about their well-being, of their king and queens Kausalya and Sumatra, whose sons had been banished. They were terrified and openly discussing what misfortune could come next with an ailing old king under the influence of the scheming queen Kaikeyi, who was verily their enemy in disguise. Sumatra rode his chariot through the throngs of people that was gathering for news of Rama. He heard their comments, which echoed his feelings, and arrived at the palace. He made his way through the bleak halls to Kausalya's chamber, where King Dasharatha still rested. Sumatra updated the king about his mission and Rama's whereabouts. The king barely heard the message and fell down unconscious, reliving his grief of parting with Rama over and over. The queens Kausalya and Sumitra helped Dasharatha back to his bed. Kausalya, desperate in her grief and with a great desire to know more about Rama, pleaded with the king to inquire more about their children's plight without fear of Kaikeyi's wrath. The king was still too shaken to speak. The kind minister Sumatra understood the king's wordless misery and described in detail all that had happened over the last 5 days of Rama's exile. He informed how he'd waited with Guha and Sringabharapura for a few days after parting with Rama to see if Rama returned or needed him. Sumatra faithfully relayed Rama's comforting messages to the king and the queens and Rama's appeals to them to treat each other affectionately and with respect despite their heartbreak and pain. Dasharatha and the queens were moved by Rama's message to send for Bharata, crown him heir, and treat him with all the respect due to a king. Sumatra conveyed Rama's message to Bharata as well to this present audience to treat his mothers equally respectfully and impartially. Sumatra, on his own, added reassurance from his observations to comfort Kausalya. How cheerfully Sita endured the hardships of traveling, walking through the forest and sleeping in the open. how Rama, with his exceptional control of his senses and mind, cared little for his own losses and hardships and lived in the forest as he lived in the palace, without worldly attachments or grief about the changes to their living conditions. He narrated how Lakshmana was single-minded in his attention to Rama and Sita's needs and remained without sleep, keeping guard while Rama and Sita rested. Sumatra related that Sita's sweet disposition and Lakshmana's devotion made it easier for Rama to cope with the realities of his exile. Sumatra reported how Sita, who enjoyed Ayodhya's gardens, was now enjoying the beauty of the uninhabited forests. He said, with her attention on Rama, heart ever united with Rama, and with Rama attentive to her comforts and needs, Sita is more cheerful in the forest than she would have been in Ayodhya without Rama. Lakshmana is affectionately performing his dharma, his duty to his old brother, and will inherit all the fruits in the next world. Sumatra, as a good minister, updated them about the overwhelming sadness in their city Ayodhya. He advised the royal couple to show strength and unity to comfort their citizens and move forward. The queen and king, unable to focus on their royal duties, entreated Sumatra to take them to Rama, realizing their happiness lay only with Rama and not in the comforts of the palace. Queen Kausalya continued reeling in grief and unable to rein her anger. She condemned the king's selfish actions that led to her bereavement and her son's losses. She praised her son Rama as best among men who renounced everything to keep his father's promise to Kaikeyi, even though Kaikeyi had disgraced the Ikshvaku dynasty and would bring about its end. Kausalya expressed her fears about how events would play out after Rama's exile if Bharata didn't willingly give up the kingdom. She wondered if the mighty armed Rama, capable of single-handedly winning himself kingdoms and destroying all that lay in his path, would accept the indignity and unprecedented injustice of taking over from Bharata. She blamed the king for thoughtlessly destroying norms, tradition, and all that was valuable, the kingdom, the dynasty's reputation, Rama's prospects, and ruining all, including his ministers and citizens. The deeply distressed king, his own harshest critic, remained speechless before losing his consciousness again. When he came back to his senses, he begged for Kausalya's mercy and forgiveness. He asked her to refrain from harsh criticism since he was already suffering greater grief due to his own sinful actions. The queen, hearing his pitiable voice expressing his wretchedness, pleaded for his pardon, for her thoughtless words uttered in grief. "My grief deludes me. This grief destroys courage, grief destroys knowledge, and my grief destroys everything. There is no enemy equal to grief." The queen, hearing the king's pitiable voice expressing his wretchedness, pleaded for his pardon, for her thoughtless words uttered in grief. "My grief deluded me. Grief destroys courage, grief destroys knowledge, grief destroys everything. There is no enemy equal to grief. The last 5 days in grief have been like 5 years of immense sorrow to me without Rama." As the night fell, the couple drifted into fitful sleep. This was the sixth night since Rama's departure from Ayodhya. Dasharatha was still slipping in and out of awareness. In his wakeful moments, he lay there with Kausalya and Sumitra by his side, thinking about his long life and what he'd done to deserve such unbearable grief and suffering in his old age. In the next episode, we will spend some more time looking at Dasharatha's past. Thank you for listening. Ram Ram.